I've autopsied every single one of them personally.
In ankle deep water. Do you know what that does to a man?
Do you know what it does to their shoes?
I wear waders to work, don't I?
It's the year 2000 and I have trench foot. Trench foot!
I have scurvy too, but that's because I think oranges are a lie made up by the government.
Welcome to the Commentary Track, a Kamen Rider podcast. I'm your host, Jared.
I'm Cody.
And I'm producer Jed.
Boys, this is it. The last three.
Yeah.
This is the last time we're ever going to hear the Kuga intro.
Producers note we recorded this episode and our coverage of the finale in the same day.
Is the last time really? We'll ever experience no fear or pain.
You're right. It is nothing but fear and pain moving forward after this.
Well, I don't have a Will It Grong today. I know we've got a long one, so I feel like we should just settle on in.
Yeah, fair.
I do want to do a brief shout out. I don't know if you guys heard, but over the course of the past week, Akira Toriyama passed away. It's a very sad day for all of us. I don't know about you guys, but Dragon Ball and Dragon Ball Z were one of the things that really got me into anime. And for millions of people, they standardized anime. They made manga and anime mainstream enough to catch on. It's the only reason we're able to do a lot of these kind of things. The reason things like Kamen Rider now have such a big fan base is just Akira Toriyama's influence across all bandwidths, drawing people into Japanese entertainment as a whole. I don't know if you can calculate the impact that man had on manga and anime just as a genre.
This podcast doesn't exist without him.
Dragon Ball was one of my gateway nerddoms. It's the only reason Toonami ever existed.
Yeah.
Lost a legend.
For this week, we are going to be watching episodes 47 and 48, Decision and Kuga.
Episodes 47 and 48 were written by Arakawa Naruhisa and directed by Ishida Hidenori. They originally aired January 7th and 14th, 2001.
Children waiting for the day they feel good.
A jump to the sky turns to a rider review.
That was the most morose wandering I've seen in weeks.
Yeah.
I haven't seen anybody over the age of 14 do this much wandering in this show.
This is the most morose wandering an adult has done.
It was all in the rain.
Well, yeah. It's the most morose of all.
Even the sky cried.
No one wants to see this final fight.
I do.
I mean, us, yes, well, but...
to be fair, we've already seen part of the beginning of the final fight, but it was all in shaky cam and out of focus in the very beginning. But why don't you take us through that?
All right. The episode starts in first person perspective. Mm-hmm. And we've had a couple moments of this throughout the series, but this is like the longest focus on we're in first person, and we're not sure whose perspective we're in to begin with.
Yeah, it's shaky, it's raining, there's fire everywhere, it's disorientating, and it's still a better use of first person camera work than that entire Dune movie they came out with. Or Doom.
I was about to say, I didn't think the new Dune was in first person, but man, what a flip that would be if part two, we just completely switch perspectives.
Yep. Lisan al-Ghaib. He's not Kuga. He's Lisan al-Ghaib.
But we see...
And Aguva Ziba is played by Yuri Kenji. His name is derived from Dark and Kuwagatamushi, Stag Beetle.
So him named Dark Stag Beetle.
Yes.
The evil beetle.
And with that... I can finally mark down the last part of the Grongadex.
You finished it. I'm so proud of you. Just like in a real Pokemon game, you'll get the exact same award that you get in every one when you do complete your full Pokedex. An attaboy.
That's not true. I get an increased shiny chance.
Oh, you new generation bastards. Back in my day, you got a certificate.
Yeah, whatever. Gen 1's not as good as everyone says it is.
How dare you?
Heart Gold and Soul Silver are the best that franchise has ever been.
Ooh, that might be the most controversial statement we've ever shared on this.
Let's get back to this fever dream.
Yep, shaky cam, rainy fire.
We have Daguva standing there in the rain. We get a brief close-up as the camera moves towards a department store window, and we see the reflection of Kuga in the glass, and his belt is broken.
Yeah, it's the same sort of glowy cracks we see right before all of our monsters exploded.
Yeah. There's laughing, Dagova says, "Make me smile more." And we briefly see his monster form for the first time.
Yeah, it's pretty freaking legit.
This bears a lot of shocking resemblances to Kuga, doesn't it?
Weird.
Yeah, it's almost like he's some sort of dark funhouse mirror.
Or like some sort of evil counterpart.
Yes, and that brings us to this week's Tropusatsu. Evil counterpart. It is, in fact, you know, what it says on the tin. This is the evil counterpart to this. One character being similar, shockingly similar to another, just evil. Now, if the evil character shows up first, and then the good character comes later, that's good counterpart. They are mirrored tropes of each other. Usually, this is saved for the big bad because, you know, theming. And this is really shown by this discussion of smiles.
Oh god, yes.
Because Godai's focus has always been other people's smiles. And here, once again, Dagova is talking about his own. Dagova is what Kuga could become if the Holy Spring does in fact run out.
Yeah, I personally love this. It's one of my favorite tropes just because it tends to lead towards very compelling, very dynamic power struggles. Not only physically, but this does tend to cause a lot of ideological conflict for main characters where they see that dark reflection. We've got Dark Link in the Legend of Zelda franchise. We've got Cowboy Bebop. We've got Spike and Vicious. Trigun. We've got Vash and Knives. It's a trope that just keeps on coming, you know, but it's a really good one.
You say every trope is your favorite.
I have quite a few favorite tropes.
It's okay to have more than one. This nightmare sequence goes on a bit longer, and we see that apparently, in his monster form, Dagova is able to
point at people and light them on fire with his brain. Yeah.
Inside cars. It's pretty horrific the number of people that are on fire as this scene goes on.
Yeah, people are bursting into flames, cars are crashing into each other, Kuga's unable to help anybody, and we just have that repetitive children's laughter over the whole thing.
That should be noted, that's Dagova's laugh.
Yeah, psycho children laughter, what did I say?
Fair enough.
Some producer Jed Lore, a friend of mine died in a bonfire accident, and yeah, this scene was hard to watch.
Yeah, I can imagine that was a difficult one to watch. Especially, I'm pretty sure you didn't see that one coming first time you watched this show. Pyrokinesis hasn't really been a thing so far.
Nope.
Unexpected revisitation of trauma. Always a welcome Thursday afternoon.
And Kuga ends up just collapsing to the ground, and we're left with just the laughter as we cut to the opening credits.
Which was really cool. They do a very good job in this show sometimes of reflecting some of the problems going on with the intro, with the outro. And this one, the entire first half of the intro is distorted.
Dagova is affecting everything, even the credits of the show.
Yeah, Dagova's the reason I haven't filed my taxes yet.
Oh.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got a little over a month. You've got time.
Damn you, Dagova. Car still dirty. Dagova.
After the credits, though, we're in sort of a fog, dream, fugue state, and we get the first, like, good, clear look at Ultimate Form Kuga.
And it looks awesome.
And Godai's voice saying, "Ichijo, I'm gonna do it." We cut to Tochigi Prefecture, and we see that it is still raining 9 days later.
Spoilers, it will continue to rain.
There's a comment made a little later on that seems to imply that Dagova is affecting the weather. So there's a good chance it has not stopped raining for the last 9 days.
Which is also kind of a parallel in itself, right? Because Godai is the one that brings everybody smiles. Smiles are associated with sunshine and brightness and happiness. And meanwhile, the entire time Dagova's been rampaging or doing whatever he's doing for 9 days, it's just been overcast and raining. You know, the most consistently soul-crushing weather we can imagine. Other than, you know, like firestorms, lizards falling from the sky.
No, that's just a cold day in South Florida.
A brisk February.
We've got Godai motorcycling through the rain. Ichijo's driving. They're talking to each other, expressing the plan to each other on what to do. But Dagova hasn't been found.
Yeah, we can't find one young man wearing all white with severe eyebrows.
You know how many of those there are in, like, any given area at any given moment in time?
They reproduce by budding.
Yes. So we cut to Polpol, and to emphasize even more symbolically how shaky everything is, we see a light flicker and go out. And then we see Pops' face, and he's just staring.
Yeah, I know we like to make fun of Polpol for not having any customers, but this, you really felt the absence. The lights are all off, the chairs are all pushed in, they're not even open.
Pops is sitting by the window staring at the wall. Nana is sitting at the bar looking at a newspaper. She asks, "Where's Godai?" And Pops gets up, walks towards her, and mentions that he's probably on an adventure, and grabs the newspaper that she's looking at and flips it over. She accuses him of not really giving an answer. And to be fair, he didn't.
Nope.
But it's also a safe assumption. But I don't think even Pops believes it. I think he just said that to say it.
I think he did too.
The next several scenes involving Godai are always going to start off with a shot of the beat chaser in the rain.
You don't want to describe that every single time?
No. Just know that it happens before we then cut inside whatever building he's actually in.
Fair enough.
This first one is Kazahaya Elementary School, and he's meeting with Mr. Kanzaki. I genuinely did not expect to see him again this late in the show, but I didn't expect him the last time or the time before that.
Yeah.
This was a character I genuinely thought we were going to see once and never again, and so surprised that he's come back as many times as he has.
I also didn't expect Godai to be wearing that weird-ass olive green turtleneck, but, you know, here we are.
And they discuss some calligraphy that the kids have done, and they specifically focus on, I'm blanking on his name, the child from Burroughs episode.
Hikari.
Okay.
Yeah, him named Hikari.
For his calligraphy assignment, he did hope. And Godai is commenting on how good the technique was for drawing it, although, you know, all of the calligraphy looks pretty much like the same person did it.
It's conspicuously looking like it was printed out.
Mr. Kanzaki, without asking him about how the last fight went, comments about, "I heard 04 got a black and gold form." And goes like, "Yeah, these things happen. I've gotten stronger, but I have to get even stronger." Discussion of if it's a good idea, and Godai's like, "As long as we hold on to hope, things are going to work out."
Takes the child's drawing off the wall.
He says he plans to go on another adventure after all this is done. And he gives a thumbs up. He asks Mr. Kanzaki for one for the road. Mr. Kanzaki gives him a thumbs up as well. There's kind of an awkward, like, laugh before they go in to hug each other.
Two grown men that don't exactly know what to do with the moment.
Yeah.
Awkward!
But from there, we cut to police headquarters, and Ichijo, Sugita, Sakurai, Nozomi, the chief, they're all there. They're discussing that they're waiting for the next set of reports from the National Weather Service to come in, but that because they've taken a much more active role, they're going to get them at 7 p.m., which is 2 hours earlier than they were supposed to. I'm guessing this is how they are trying to track Dagova, by following where the center of this weather is.
Yeah. He's like King Ghidorah from King of the Monsters. He's just surrounded by a storm.
The air is heavy.
If we don't describe somebody's appearance, it's because they're looking especially dour this episode. Everyone looks especially dour this episode.
We cut to Jonin, and Sakurako is staring at the wall of masks, particularly the one that Godai brought her that represents him. And she finally turns and walks away, goes to sit down at the computer. There's the prophecy. When the holy spring runs dry, the fearsome warrior will descend like thunder, and darkness will swallow the earth.
Mm-hmm.
And she's just staring at it when Jean walks in. And he comes in, pours himself some coffee, and asks if she's seen Godai. And she says, not since the last time. She tells Jean that Godai has decided to effectively put the prophecy into effect, that he's going to become the fearsome warrior to have to deal with Dagova. Jean is so shocked by this, he speaks English for that moment. And it's just a very loud pronounced, "What?" And then switches back to Japanese for her.
It wasn't even a French sounding "what." It was American "what."
You ever been so shocked by someone you switch languages?
Not only languages, but dialect. He went from a Frenchman with English as a second language to, like, American South. What?
And they discuss some concerns of what is the future going to hold. We cut to under a bridge, and Dagva is not wet. It's raining, but he is not wet.
It's raining sideways. He wanders in with his classic white garb on, but there's not a drop of water on him. His hair is perfect. The rain just knows better.
Interesting fact. Director Ishida Hidenori suggested that Dagva wear white to symbolize nothingness.
Interesting.
I did know that culturally in Japan, white typically is the color of death.
Huh.
So I had that assumption, but yeah, that's fascinating. He is void.
Yeah.
He's walking oblivion. Yeah, that makes sense for the character. Baruba is standing under the bridge, and as he walks up, she just sort of looks at him and goes, "You didn't kill him. You had the chance." And Dagva says that he wants to give Kuga the chance to get even stronger so that it will be fun to kill him. The idea being that it was too easy before. This is once again that cosmic level of arrogance that the Grongi have.
I guess we figured out where they get it.
Yeah. This moment right here will truly be his downfall. There's no way around it, but the idea of I wasn't going to kill him because it wouldn't have been fun.
Listen, clearly it hasn't worked out badly for anybody else who has wounded, almost killed, and then walked away from Kuga only later to, you know, explode.
Is the definition of insanity Grongi?
Yeah, basically.
Oh, okay.
That man's wearing a diaper and he's looking like a bat.
Yeah, I don't have an argument against that.
Half of these people, if you saw him in an asylum, would be like, yeah, that tracks. That guy thinks he's a rhino.
Vegas even came with his own reject straight jacket.
Oh, he did?
Oh, yeah, Vegas wasn't a straight jacket already.
Oh, my God. This is the One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest I want to watch.
At the Research Institute, Godai is talking with Inakita, and we're going to see that he is making his way around to all of the supporting characters and more or less saying his goodbyes.
This is when I caught that, because, you know, he visited the teacher. That was a little weird. It felt a little out of place, but yeah, he's straight up saying goodbye. We had that conversation before of, like, characters who are the source of hope in their universe. Do they keep smiling because they believe their own mythology, or are they still smiling just to give everybody else hope when they know how things are going to go? That's kind of what this felt like.
Yeah.
Well, either way this goes, he's not planning on sticking around.
Yeah. Nope. Either he fails and, well, no one's going to be around anymore either, or he's going to succeed and get back to dream chasing.
You know, or be the harbinger of ultimate darkness.
In which case, there's not going to be anyone around anyways.
Yeah, no taxes next year.
Yeah.
It was 24 years ago. I think we can assume the world is fine.
You and I must be looking at different worlds. This one kind of sucks.
True.
Yep.
We can assume you have to do your taxes this year.
Thanks, Dagva.
While they're talking, Godai notices that Inakita has brought in pictures of Tsuryu. And I guess this is the first time Godai has seen what he looks like.
Yeah.
Because he comments and asks about how things are going, for a moment worrying us that what we thought was the resolution to her storyline has in fact not ended.
I'm glad they just tied a bow on that and moved on.
And she's trying. She says that with Dagva on the loose, she really hasn't had the chance to go home, but that they did make pancakes together the other day, and they turned out terrible. But they tried.
Sometimes messing up a recipe with your significant other, your child, that builds a more fun memory than getting it right.
Yes.
As long as you're not an angry pants about it.
And then she talks about having gone on a walk. And Goda's like, did that end badly too? And Inaki goes, how does a walk end badly? And ma'am, there are so many ways a walk can end badly.
Clowns in the sewer. Wendigos in the woods. Walks are dangerous.
I went on a walk with Bug today and three separate times had to pull him out of an anthill.
Mm.
Was it the same anthill?
It was not. It was three different anthills. Two of them he stepped in because he was just walking. One of them he actually put his hand in.
Ah, self-destruction.
Thankfully, he did not get bit.
Mm.
That and the moment where he tried to sprint away from me as a car was coming from the other direction were the most stressful moments of the walk.
Whee!
The characters finally decide to acknowledge the fact that there's just been a revolver on the screen of Inakita's computer. And we find out that this is the report that she is drafted up about the nerve disruptor bullets.
I think she's having to put this together because she's going to have to testify before the UN because of what she's done.
There aren't any laws you have actually broken, but we are aware that you have broken laws. We have to define them around what you have created.
We have no word for your crime. That would be on theme for this series.
Did you miss her speech about the weight of what she made?
No, I did not.
Yeah, she had a very Oppenheimer little mini speech there.
I am glad that this does, in fact, weigh heavy on her. Because once the Gurangi are gone, that ammunition will still be there.
Yep. And if it does that to a hyper being, I can't imagine what it would do to a normal person.
Pulp. We made the joke way back in the beginning about, like, World War I era dum-dum bullets. I'm pretty sure it's gonna do something along those lines, but worse. We cut to Ichijo driving. Nozomi radios. The reports come in. They have an idea of where the Gurangi are. He heads that direction. We cut to the preschool, and Minori is out on the porch with a small contingency of Muppets.
They can't go back inside. The box only owns the preschool now.
All of the children are depressed.
Yes.
And they comment that even 04 got beat. You know, what hope do any of us have? And dang, kid, like, you're right, but why are you having this thought?
Yeah, that's grown-up thoughts.
Minori does her best to try and cheer them up. One way or another, things will be over soon. The phone rings and she goes in. It's Keiko. She's...
Remember Keiko? She's still here too.
Yeah. Are we going to get Junichi? Are we going to see, like, all tertiary and caduceary characters again?
Please, just more fight scenes.
Spoilers.
Please, just more fight scenes.
Keiko is calling because she started having contractions, so she's at the hospital.
Yes, yes. She calmly started having contractions, calmly went to the hospital, calmly picked up the phone, and calmly called to give an update. She's the most composed pregnant lady going into labor I've ever seen in my life. She's not even sweaty.
Minori wishes her luck, but the way she says it also kind of puts a weird amount of pressure on the unborn child.
May all the hopes for the future of mankind be born with your child so that everyone can keep smiling. Thanks, bitch. I was going to name him Jim.
I was fine. I called you to tell you I was fine, and now I'm not.
This is why I don't call people.
We cut to Kodo Ward, and Ichijo and Sakurai have pulled up to another abandoned warehouse, and they're standing under some dilapidated structure. Sakurai asks, hey, is it okay that you haven't told Godai about this? And there's a discussion about trying to solve things without getting Godai involved because there's that whole prophecy thing about the end of the world and maybe we should avoid that. So I was, all right, yeah, you're onto something there. I'll check this way, you go that way. And we cut to the hospital and Tsubaki is talking about his perfect Sunday.
All the dream vacations him and Godai can go on once he finished his little fight thing.
He says he prefers the beach to the mountains because he likes swimming. And if he's going to go on vacation with Godai, then he wants to be able to swim. And I do want the story of the two of them, like, going off and having wacky adventures together.
Yeah, I'd ship that.
I didn't even necessarily think in that regards, but it's like how we'll never see that 2.5 hour long conversation between Sugita and Godai in the car.
Be great.
Yeah. While they're talking, nurse brings in some x-rays. Tsubaki looks them over. Godai asks, well, how do I look, doc?
Pretty hot.
You see that thing on the x-ray that's got cracks? That's not supposed to have cracks. Stop it.
It's not as damaged as it was 9 days ago, but it's still not fully healed itself. Godai's like, does that mean I can still transform? Tsubaki goes, yeah, I don't see why not.
Can I go punch him? Sure. I could tell you not to, but you're not going to listen to me, so go ahead.
You're probably not at full strength, is still kind of weak there, because again, still damaged, but hey man, you're literally the only hope we have for any of this.
Any more of those drugs you gave my boyfriend? Those are great.
And Godai gives a very genuine and very solemn, sincere thank you to Tsubaki for all that he's done for him before leaving. We cut back to Kodo Ward, and Ichijo has wandered onto the hospital level of Silent Hill 2.
It's a terrible place.
And he's just slowly making his way down the hallway, peeking indoors. And it's spooky and atmospheric. It's everything you would expect from this. We cut back to Godai driving in the rain, and he comes to a stop seemingly in the middle of the street. And he looks around, and we see that there's flowers and stuffed animals.
Yeah, it's the memorial for the Zero victims.
We get a flash back in his head, like, yes, this is where that fight with Dagova happened. And Godai just stands there, rain pouring down, taking everything in, before finally, much longer than I would have expected the scene to last, like, to the point it has reached uncomfortable territory.
It's now a traffic hazard.
Finally, he goes back to the bike, gets on, keeps moving. We cut back to Ichijo. He has made his way down the hallway, and there's one final door, and he swings it open. Really good fire discipline.
Mm-hmm.
Leads gun first, but finger is not on the trigger.
It's amazing what responsible nations teach their police officers.
Seriously, an American cop would have tossed like 3 flashbangs in before doing anything else.
I have comments. I will not get us defunded. We can move on.
Defunded?
That requires funding.
I was about to say, it's not like we're making ad revenue here or anything.
Flamin' Hot Cheetos.
Ichijo looks around the room, and there on the ground, is it leather? Is it human skin? Who can really say?
Your average tanner.
Are you an average tanner? Do you know an average tanner?
I have an average tan. It's not a good tan. I need to go outside more.
I know a guy named Tanner.
Close enough. So anyway, we cut to Pol Pol.
This time, Godai stays outside, looking at the door.
Yeah, he didn't go inside to say goodbye to Pops and Nana.
I think he does, but the screen goes white. We don't get to see Godai interacting with Pol Pol. Clearly, this is the one that's going to hurt the most. And we cut to somewhere, and Dagova is just standing there with a light shining in his face. Did it look like the actor was just uncomfortable with that?
Yeah, he looks like he's blinded and still trying to smile maniacally.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah, that's the end of the episode.
I didn't expect this to be such a slow burn. Like, I get that we're setting up for some high emotional stakes. You know, we did a lot of the fight off screen that we did see. I'm sure there's more coming, but this felt slow. I'm anxious to see the rest of the story to see how it pays off the other half.
How about we just jump into it?
I'm excited.
No fear, no pain.
And we're back.
That's quite a conclusion.
Yeah. Let's just get into it, shall we?
Mm-hmm.
The episode starts off with Godai inside Pol Pol.
Yeah, he did come inside. That's nice.
Thought we weren't going to get to see that. Glad we did. And he says his goodbyes to Pops and Nana, says he's got to take care of things this time, and then he's going off on adventure. And Pops is excited for this when he hears the adventure part. He's like, oh, you're ready? Nana, not thrilled at all.
Mm-mm.
Well, imagine my shock.
Still the one that got away if you never had them to begin with.
Nana demands to know why as he's leaving. And he says, once again, because I'm Kuga, I have to go deal with ULF Zero this time, and then I'm going on adventure. And as he goes out the door, Nana turns back and is like, what does he mean by this? Pops.
Oh, yeah. It's all coming together.
Pops gets a look in his eye and goes, this time. And finally, after so long, Pops gets it.
Man only had like 4 dots, but he finally connected them.
do imagine you're right that he is just furiously going through his scrapbook now, being like, how was I so blind?
I had the evidence from day one.
We get the opening credits, and they're still distorted.
Mm-hmm.
We cut to the Koto ward. Nichijo is still holding that roll of human skin, monster skin. It looks fleshy.
It's definitely fleshy.
And Baruba walks in and proceeds to talk about how there's no difference between the Grongi and the Linto, as far as she can tell anymore. Nichijo demands to know what the hell this leather is.
Fair question.
If it has anything to do with the ultimate darkness. And Baruba's just having none of it. You're a Linto warrior that hurts other Linto.
Hunts, not hurts.
Oh, I read it as hurts, sorry.
Yeah, no, you're a Linto that hunts other Linto.
There's potentially an argument to be made that, you know, given their use of the police, it's slightly different. You know, she certainly would be right in the U.S., but...
harm is done either way.
Yes. And Ichijo tries to come in a little closer to demand answers, and she just palm heels him away, like swatting at an insect. He goes crashing into some boxes. She just walks away. He pulls himself up, chases after her. She walks out of the building. He jumps over some railing to try and get down to her, and she's not even paying attention. She's not turning around, not doing anything. And Ichijo draws his gun and fires. And she stops at this point and turns around and looks at him. And he proceeds to unload the revolver into her.
Mm-hmm.
And she just looks at him with, like, a sad smile.
Yeah, resignation, acceptance. There's a lot going on. There is a ton of tiny little intimate facial acting that we get this episode.
Yeah, this scene, the next scene, there's so much genuine, just good character work being put in here. And Baruba, who has been speaking in Japanese to Ichijo, chooses to switch back to Garongi for this. And she tells him that she likes him, that she hopes someday she gets to see him again.
Hey, you two should kiss!
Nope.
And I think it's perfect, the switching language, because Ichijo's going to be left wondering what that was. And she falls into the water. And that's it. Like, obviously, we're this close to the end of the show. Baruba had to be dealt with. And once we saw that Sakurai and Sugita were the ones to kill Doldo, obviously, Ichijo was going to be the one to kill Baruba.
Yeah, they've kind of been building this for a few episodes. They keep having them confront each other.
I said way back in episode 2, eventually Ichijo was going to kill one. Like, they had to bring it to that. But it's just so quick. It happens and it's done. I genuinely expected more build-up towards this moment.
I honestly think that was intentional. It's almost speaking to the point where she said, there's no difference between you and us. This average Linto just killed one of the more powerful Grongi. We caught up. There doesn't have to be ceremony behind it, and that's the problem. There's nothing impressive about what he does. He just draws his weapon and pulls the trigger.
Almost casual in how he kills her.
Yep.
Yeah.
We've gotten to a point where the problem is that it is a casual thing for one of our normal people to kill one of these beings.
You know, now that I think about it, the first couple times that he interacted with Baruba, sure, gun was drawn, but he was still telling her, stop, going through what you think of as normal police procedure. And he didn't say anything this time.
Nope.
He just shot.
Yep.
Damn, maybe the scene is more powerful than I initially thought it was.
I think it's more powerful because of the lack of attention to that.
Yeah.
They chose to make it a simple, dirty, casual act. And that is more haunting, honestly.
Yeah. And as if to mirror it, we then cut to Nagino, and Daguva is once again surrounded by piles of burning bodies, and he is smiling. It's casual. Ooh, that's a parallel I didn't put together until you brought it up to me, and I...
That theme of the nature of violence.
Yeah. We cut to the preschool. I guess all the characters that we hadn't seen Godai say goodbye to, we're going to get to.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's there with Minori and the kids, and he's explaining to them that he's got an adventure that he's going to go on, and he's not going to see them for a while. The Muppets are not happy. Who will sate their lust for entertainment with him gone?
That's why he got up to 2,000 skills in hindsight. He had to keep entertaining the Muppets.
Shuro has returned to delinquency.
It's true, his rat tail's longer than ever.
It's like mid-spine.
And Minori promises the children that she will make sure that they have fun even with Godai gone. And Godai looks out the window and goes, you know, at some point it's going to stop raining. And there's a beautiful blue sky up there that stretches farther than you can see. And he leaves. And we cut to police headquarters. Sugita, Nozomi, and the chief are there when they get the radio call from Ichijo, who informs them that he killed Baruba. Although he specifies that neither he nor Sakurai could find the body because she fell into the bay.
And Sugita, Nozomi, and the chief are building some sort of machine. They later address it as the radar that they're building to try and find UF-0.
Yeah. We cut to Jonin University. Sakurako and Jean are still there when they hear a sound and see a bike pulling up. And Sakurako runs outside. The writers clearly, despite what they did for the show, intended, or maybe thought they intended, to show that there was supposed to be some sort of romantic interest between Godai and Sakurako, because this conversation is a couple discussing the fact, hey, I've got to go away for a while. It's not quite the wait for me, but this is meant to be viewed as romantic, and that's not what they have done.
I'm not sure if it was meant to be there the whole season, because this feels almost like trying to cover up the Goichi stuff that was so clearly in the show.
Possibly. For me, I read this as Sakurako has been warning him about this path the whole time. She's expressed her concern for him. She's told him it's flat out dangerous, and he's leaned in. So to me, this scene felt like two characters who wanted to express that they cared about each other, despite the fact that any actual conversation wouldn't go anywhere. We've seen this conversation play out enough times that for me, their quiet sitting on the stairs just felt like two people that knew if this was brought up or directly addressed, it would be a fight, and neither one of them wanted that. And both of them kind of silently acknowledging that this might be their last moment in each other's presence. Let's not waste it disagreeing. Let's just be here in the moment with each other because it might be the last one we get. That's kind of what I took from it.
Between the rain, the final goodbye, the silence, the awkward laughs, the umbrella, her chasing after him screaming. This scene is built on romance genre tropes.
She did run out in the rain like a dumbass.
And particularly that last line at the end as he drove away, the "I'll leave the window unlocked for you." That's a romantic trope thing.
I guess we just shipped Ichijo and Godai so hard that I haven't picked up on romance between them this entire series. I think that let me enjoy this scene a little more because I was able to take something out of it that wasn't that.
There have only been a handful of moments that read romantic throughout the season. Mostly they read as a gay guy and his lesbian best friend.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ichijo radios, says that Dagova's in Nagano. Godai starts heading that way. We then get a quick shot of Dagova. I'm sure he's just laughing or bodies.
Yeah, just doing things with dirt, fire, and corpses.
We jump forward in time a bit. Godai is at an expressway. Nozomi radios in because it's after 7. They got the radar report from the National Weather Service. They have confirmed exactly where Dagova is. Jump forward in time. We're now at Matsumoto in Nagano. Godai pulls up to a mound of dirt and fire. Dagova's there. Says, "You know where to meet me. Come get me." And vanishes. And at this moment, Ichijo shows up.
Looking as lame as ever.
As charming as he is, he just doesn't look it on a motorcycle.
He has a particular aesthetic, and it does not lend itself to motorcycle ridership.
Correct.
He just doesn't have a face for a helmet.
But Ichijo pulls up and is like, where's Dagava? And Gode says, he's at Kurogatake, where this all began. And so they head that way. They finally arrive, get off their motorcycles, and Ichijo takes a moment and apologizes to Godai for everything that he's had to do, and says, I wish you could have just kept on having adventures. Godai is like, no, you don't need to be sorry. Thank you. I never would have gotten to meet you.
I am fine.
And whereas the previous scene was written to try and appear romantic and didn't, this was written not to be romantic, but this is a couple having a final conversation.
Yep.
And Godai Henshin's.
The somber moment undercut by?
Yep.
Rocky Horror Picture Show.
As all somber moments are.
You're welcome.
None of these people sponsor us, but I'd like for them to.
Yes. God, could you imagine? Could Disney sponsor us?
I was just going to say Tim Curry.
He totally could.
He totally would.
Not Disney. Screw them. They fund genocide.
And yet the Pokemon thing's still the most controversial thing we've said.
So Godai Henshin's, and he goes straight into Ultimate Kuga.
Oh, and it's a cool transformation. We've seen some very bad iterations of this same visual transformation method, but this one was polished. They did enough blending with the background to make it look good. You had the Tron lines arc over his body and the armor plates formed underneath that.
Yeah.
That was cool as shit.
That's real cool. They perfect that style of transformation a few seasons from now.
Oh, nice.
Kuga's ultimate form has a punching power of 80 tons, a kicking power of 100 tons. It can jump up to 90 meters and can run 100 meters in 2 seconds.
Zoom.
Damn.
He's a fast, strong boy.
And it's the amazing form, but with like gold spreading across, defining like the plates of the armor more. And the shoulders are pointy. There's elbow blades now.
Dope ass head crest.
It now has the four prongs.
It's a bit more bestial, a bit more like a Gurungi.
Yep. A little more savage than the rest of his forms have been.
And he strides out into the snow. And Dagava has apparently been standing there for, I don't know, 7 hours? Because we jump from 10 p.m. to almost 6 a.m.?
We don't know how long it took him to get there, but seems like he can teleport, so maybe a while. He might have left and got a snack, came back, you know, kill a few dozen people, pop over, check your watch, remove a third world country from existence, cancel a popular children's show, you know, evil stuff.
And Dagava starts walking forward, and he changes into his monster form, and just like him, it's white. Maybe it was just me, but particularly with the white of his monster form, the gold horns, while they mirrored Kuga, also like looked more like a crown than a crest.
Yep.
He's got a tattered cape and chains. When you look at them side by side, they're almost palette swaps of each other.
Yeah.
And this fight is brutal.
It's just savage from the word go.
No special moves.
No finesse.
It's just punches and kicks, and every hit is smashing armor. We see blood flying off. This is just violent.
Two special moves. They do set each other on fire.
It's true. They do pyrokinesis each other. But
Dagava,
it does
like,
nothing.
Waves his hand and Kuga bursts into flames. Kuga kind of like waves his hand back and Dagava bursts into flames and they kind of stagger towards each other.
That's preamble. Almost not worth including. It's
foreplay.
For one of them.
To be fair, all of this has been foreplay for Dagava.
And as they continue to just beat each other, we get some phenomenal camera work. The swing of a fist. Kuga's in his armor, but then it's Yusuke. And then it's Dagava in his monster form, but then it's him in his human form. And it's switching back and forth.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that scene. There were two kind of interpretations my brain did for it, right? Because, like, you've got the one where they're actually being knocked out of form and having to re-up their form to continue fighting. Or there's the more symbolic of just showing them and just who they are underneath all of the armor, still just blood through the teeth, wailing away at each other.
During this part, Dagava starts laughing And he continues laughing through the fight. He is having a grand time. Even as he is getting his teeth knocked in, blood spewing out of his mouth, he's having a blast. And a little bit later, Godai starts crying. And you get this horrendous audio juxtaposition of the laughing and sobbing while watching them just locked and beating each other.
By horrendous, you mean feeling. It's executed very well.
Yes, the execution is flawless, but oh.
Yeah, like the emotional payout for it is what's horrendous. You feel it.
To not feel something while watching and listening to this, I would be concerned by the person.
Yeah. You get your own set of white armor because you're a goddamn sociopath.
We cut a couple times to Ichijo trying to make his way to where this fight is happening, and we eventually get to they're not in armor. It's just human form Dagava and Godai punching each other in the face.
We did miss the part where they managed to each land a hit on the other person's belt.
Oh, yes.
And I think that's what triggered them to go back to human form, because first Kuga lands the first punch on Dagava's belt. He staggers back. It's got the cracks that we saw earlier in the first set of these episodes. And then a couple of hits later, Dagava managed to land the same hit on Godai. And a few moments later, they both detransition, and then it's just fist to fist, bare knuckles to bare knuckles.
And it's one of them hauling off, punching the other in the face, the person who's getting hit staggering backwards, standing back up, swinging, hitting the other, just back and forth.
Yep. Godai sobbing through a mouthful of blood, Dagava laughing through a mouthful of blood.
We get a wide shot for a moment, and we see this just ring of red snow around them.
Yeah, not like a solid pool. The strikes that they're hitting each other is spattering the snow around them in probably 10 feet in every direction.
Yeah.
And it's just vaguely pink tinted.
But it's the entire circle, more or less.
There's not one piece of that snow that hasn't been spattered with blood at some point.
And Ichijo finally crests the hill, comes over and sees Dagava and Godai both laying there on the ground. He calls out for Godai, and the episode ends.
It is the Monster Mash.
I have concerns.
Does this confirm Dagava's dead?
I'm not fucking corpses, but yes, he is dead.
Boo.
Oh.
Since Dagava's actor was only 17 at time of filming, I will have to pass. I would fuck that bug suit, as long as whoever is in it is of age.
It's very reasonable of you.
Okay, then.
It's got horns. I'm horny. It works. It just works.
I mean, there's something, like, savagely regal about the design. Doesn't trip my trigger, but, you know, you do you.
You do you. Skay.
In a heartbeat.
Goofy teeth and all.
So, let's get back on track. What do we want to pick as our scale? Motorcycles in the rain?
Have we done thumbs up yet? I think we have, but not sure.
You said goodbyes.
I think we did thumbs up for Mr. Kanzaki's episode.
We did. Could do hopeful goodbyes. We didn't really have an iconic item in these episodes.
Turtlenecks? Rainstorms?
Kind of like turtlenecks.
It's the final fight, the pinnacle episode, and we're going with turtlenecks.
I said motorcycles in the rain initially.
Eyebrows.
Bombastic side eye.
We can go with turtlenecks.
Okay, so I guess we're going to start with Dagava.
Baruba.
We have to start with Baruba. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Are we ranking Baruba as supporting cast?
Yes, okay. Baruba will be supporting cast.
Baruba is a top-tier evil supporting cast member. She's important, even playing foil to Ichijo, the secondary lead of our story in a way. She's interesting, and becomes all the more so the more we see her. She was instrumental in what knowledge we gained of the Gurungi. She's a 5.
So, the sort of measure that I have taken, because we've done it with Zaijo and Doldo, is if we were to remove Baruba from the story, what happens? And I think that potentially there is a version of the story without her where the Gurungi are just rampaging monsters. And that would have still worked, but the season would have been so much lesser for that. I am given to understand, though having not read all of the volumes of it yet. For the 2015 manga, Daguva's not even in it. Baruba is the big bad.
Really? Interesting.
Having only read the first volume, I can't confirm, but I've seen some stuff online saying that, yeah, she is the villain of that.
Hmm.
So, yeah, she's super important to this. She's a fascinating character. She is an easy five to give.
I'm not going to stretch quite that high. So for me, it's part of the same conversation. She is a very instrumental part of this series. But at the same time, she's never really been in charge, right? She's always been the lieutenant for somebody else.
I mean, until the Ghost showed up, there was a bit more implication. But like, the Zoo and the May were doing things because she told them to.
That's fair. But, you know, from my perspective, there is definitely a version of this where she's removed and it does go on. Like, she was a very, very strong character. She definitely acted as a good foil to Ichijo. Like, the conflicts and the conversations the two of them had, like two different worlds colliding and brushing past each other, was very interesting and very compelling. I think, given my context for the rest of this, I think she's a four for me. She's much stronger than average in terms of supporting cast. She's not medium. She's not average by any means. But there's only one character in the series that I would consider a 5 out of 5 in terms of supporting cast. And, you know, we'll get there when we get there. So given that I have that 5 and comparing their role in the series to her role in the series, she doesn't quite stack up as strong.
That's fair.
Yeah.
So let's see. That's a 5, a 5, and a 4.
Should be 4.66 turtlenecks.
Yeah, it's 4.66 eating turtlenecks.
Excellent.
So now would be Daguva.
Daguva.
Daguva's design is amazing. Another standout not just among Gurungi but monsters from the franchise as a whole. It's even better as an evil reflection of Kuga's black ultimate form. With white being used to represent nothingness, combined with the fact he was usually presented as blurry, I feel it was successful. 5 out of 5. Oh god, is Daguva horrifying. He taps into something similar to characters like Joker from DC Comics, a brutal killer who laughs the whole time. Win or lose, it's all for his own enjoyment. But all the more terrifying is this slight air of innocence. There is something almost childlike to him, a sense of wonder and excitement at his atrocities. The fact that this plays opposite Godai so perfectly is just gravy. Another 5. Daguva's strength as a big bad is in who he is, not what he does. This isn't a rampage like we've seen before. This is wanton destruction. There's no anger, there's no game, there's not even anything to be gained. It is destruction for destruction's sake. That's scary, but not overly compelling as an endgame plan. I'll still give it a 4 because while simple, he goes big. That brings my score to 4.6 repeating turtlenecks.
All right. Starting with design, his monster form is spectacular. So well put together. I love it as the mirror to Kuga. I love the using the horns as a crown. The tattered cape is evocative of beetle wings. He's a savage warrior king. The design mirrors that perfectly. They put just as much as they did into Godol, at least. His human form, I like that it mirrors the outfit Yusuke has been wearing in the opening credits for the entire show. And it's even cooler knowing now the idea of white to represent nothingness, that he is void, unknowable, a force of nature. That's really cool. Yeah, I'll give a 5 for design. Perfectly happy to do that. Behavior is terrifying because it's glee. It's joy. He is happy with this. He killed his own kind because it wasn't fun having them play anymore. It's like a capricious child or spiteful god going one route and then being like, I'm bored of this now. I'm going to do something else. All of you, gone. It's horrific. And for a big bad, you want horrific. Yeah, I think another 5. Methodology. Wanton destruction for the joy of it. His sole motivation, his sole methodology is to amuse himself. sparing Kuga because he wanted to have more fun, and killing him now, well, there's more fun to be had later. Culminating in that fight at the end for him laughing, I guess, to the grave. Yeah, there are certainly villains we will see later on whose methodology and whose schemes are grander in scale, but there's something pure and primeval almost about this. Its terror, its effectiveness is in the simple joy of all of it. And I think maybe, yeah, I think I give another 5. I think it's a perfect score for Dagova. So that's 5 turtlenecks.
Damn. I'll be mirroring some of the things that I've already said for sure, but design right off the rip. We could exclude his human aesthetic altogether, and just based off the final armor design, he would be a 5. It's cohesive, it's stark. It gives me the same vibes as like the white tiger suit from Power Rangers. Like those colors, they pop, they clash. His entire visual aesthetic bled menace from the spiked crown to the chains hanging off of them. Like every part of this is something that's meant to evoke a physical threat. The psychology behind its design is a psychological threat. There's no look to this that isn't menacing. 5. Personality. I'm going to try and avoid saying the same things that have already been said, but there are a couple of proxies to this character that I love that I want to bring up. As Jared, you mentioned him laughing on his way to the grave. It reminds me of Moriarty from the modern Sherlock, the one with Benedict Cumberbatch, the one who, when realizes that the only way out of this situation was for him to die, killed himself gladly with a smile on his face, understanding that by going to his grave, he was a bigger inconvenience than being alive. Like just that raw malice that extends even beyond and the animalistic desire for self-preservation is a problem. That's a true believer in oneself, and there is nothing more dangerous. He was willing to not attempt to save himself and just sit there and beat Godai to death with him because that was the biggest threat he could be right then. And if it meant he was gonna die, it didn't matter even a little bit. That's a problem. He reminds me as well of Hisoka from Hunter x Hunter. Hisoka, he's got kind of an ambiguous gender. Is he male? Is he female? What does he identify as? He identifies as a fucking threat. He literally lets the two main characters off as kids because he believes they'll be more fun to hunt once they've grown up and become more powerful. And we see that here. He's the first one that doesn't kill Godai because Godai's not good enough to kill yet. We've had people who are like, you'll be the last part of my game, or just sit there and watch. But for Dagova, it's just like, no, you're literally not strong enough to stop me right now, so there's no point in killing you. And even that, the flippant condescension, holy shit, love it. I'm going to give him a 5 on that. Plan, kind of exactly the same way. I don't even know if wanton destruction is a term that covers it entirely, because the purpose is the joy of it. Watching other people suffer in a way that transcends even what Jalaji was doing. It brought Dagova joy to kill people. Like Jalaji, it was almost a voyeuristic watching people's terror grow. No, I don't care how this affects you. I want to destroy this, so I'm going to destroy it. I'm going to light that car on fire so it crashes into that one because the crash is funny. When you combine that childlike glee with that dark primal malice, you get these horrifying characters, and that was very, very compelling for me. We definitely had characters with stronger plans. We'll probably see big bads with stronger plans. So for that reason, I'm going to go with a 4 or 5 on plan. And that's the only thing that's off on being a 5 here. So with those 3 scores combined, it's going to be a 4.83 for me, which gives our overall score for Dagova a 4.833. And a well-deserved one. He's only a few points off of perfect, and it's worth it.
Yeah. So now we'll move on to these episodes as a whole.
The point of these episodes is Godai's tour of our supporting cast. He's saying his final goodbyes, because even if he survives, he won't be back for a bit. Some scenes are better than others, and that radar plot line was pointless, but overall it's very good character work. 4 out of 5. The opening scene is gut-wrenching. In part that is due to my own pyrophobia, but I think these images would be affecting even without those. The framing for our conversations is perfect, and other than overdoing the rain in a couple spots, The fight is beautifully shot. Even for the high quality of Kuga, this is a standout showing. 5. Seeing the first fight through Godai's eyes as he's just curb-stomped is a hell of a way to start an episode. But the real point is the final showdown, and it does not disappoint. Pound for pound, skill for skill, these two are evenly matched. The fight comes down to who wants to win more, and in the end it's Godai because he's fighting for something other than himself. It's visceral. It's intense. It's emotional. It's everything. It's a 5. That brings my score to another 4.6 repeating turtlenecks.
So, plot. I wasn't expecting the vast majority of this being Godai saying his goodbyes to the supporting cast, because it's not really the sort of thing you see, particularly in Western television. Like you said, some scenes are more effective than others. I liked the moments with all of them, even when, like, it's so bizarre to have a moment with Mr. Kanzaki, but kind of appreciative that it's there. Yeah, the B-plot of the radar is meaningless. There were so many other ways you could have tracked Dagova if you needed to, but, like, the trail of destruction should have been clear enough. Yeah, I think a 4 feels right. The cinematography was impeccable. That opening POV scene was jarring. Good use of cameras, different shot lengths and compositions. We've come to expect this sort of stuff from Kuga. They have done consistently good camera work. And even the new pure CG Henshin looked so much better than a lot of the others. Yeah, I think 5 as well. And then both of the fights were disturbing in very different ways. I'm still getting shivers just from Dagova laughing till the end. And just the show has been pretty sparing with its use of blood during the fights. Sure, once the Go showed up, Godai is getting an injury that causes some blood. But for every hit, it's a fight we have not seen. Even when he butchered Jalaji at the end, there was not blood like this. It's visceral. You truly do feel the weight of this combat more than any other. And yeah, that's a 5. Easy. So my score's same as yours, Jed. 4.6 repeating turtlenecks.
I guess that leaves it to me then. I'll start with plot as well. You guys are absolutely correct. The radar plot didn't do anything. It was completely unnecessary. I feel like we took a lot of time to say goodbye to some of our supporting cast that maybe could have been spent better in other places. The last fight we had was absolutely brutal, but there's a lot of design space that we didn't get to see. We didn't get to see any of Dagova's weapons. We've got very, very little runtime with Final Form Kuga. We could have seen more of that. And for that, I'm actually going to give the plot a 3.5. Cinematography, though, we're going to go ahead and bounce right back up to a 5, because I couldn't find any CGI in these episodes that was questionable. The full-on CGI transformation into Ultimate, they took their time, they did it right. It looked good. The transition even to him being actually there in the suit instead of the CGI overlay was even great. The effects looked good, like the angles were great. During the fight scene, things felt almost claustrophobically intimate between our two combatants. So for me, the cinematography is going to be a 5. Fights are not going to be able to max out at a 5 for the exact same reason the plot didn't. We had underutilized time, and while everything we had from these fights was incredible, at the end of the day, it was shorter than I wanted. This is our final conclusion. This is the war of ideals. Either the world ends in darkness and fire, or Godai's right, and it's okay for people to have hope. And I do very much appreciate the artistic choice of just making it a slugfest. All the other highfalutin shit, all the fancy shit is out the window, it's gone. It's just fist-to-fist, ideal-to-ideal.
I don't think I could have taken more of that laughing and sobbing.
I feel like that's still where the fight should have ended, but we could have had more lead-up to it. You know, we didn't get any form changes, and there's something puritanical about that. I appreciated it as a choice. I still feel like there's more we could have displayed, but for what we had, it was exquisite. It connected with you. You're sitting in this moment. You're watching these two beat the shit out of each other. Everything is perfectly balanced. There wasn't even really any soundtrack to go behind it, just the impacts. And that draws you in. But that's points to the cinematography, not to the fight scenes themselves. So for that, I'm giving the fights a 4, which leaves my final score at a 4.166, which gives our episode total a 4.49555 repeating.
Well, with that, there's only one episode left. So join us next week when we watch episode 49, Yusuke.
You can reach us by email at commentarytrack@gmail.com or on Twitter at commentarytrack. You can support us at patreon.com/thecommentarytrack, where you can get access to our running commentary for every episode, as well as bi-monthly-ish bonus episodes. Coming soon is the Kuga Special Episode 50. Good job.
I'm not comfortable with that.
Nothing good ever comes from that song.
I went straight back to my middle school feelings with Mad World playing. Are you kidding? I'm uncomfortable. Let's do it.